Welcome. Good afternoon. You've all survived to the last day. That's amazing. You must have not gone to any parties like me. Bienvenido. In case you're wondering, this is not a panel, as you can tell, because we're standing up in front of the panel, and we actually have slides. And thankfully, we have more people than we have slides. We were kind of worried about that being Tuesday. So set a few expectations, what we're going to do. First, I'm going to go very briefly over this kind of concept of what we call community-centered design. And we're going to quickly jump into what I call teardowns. So we're going to do teardowns of a bunch of different online community sites, message boards, so on and so forth, and then dive really deep with Reddit, with Steve, and user voice of myself. We'll then have a few kind of stories about growing up communities. So the first bulk of this talk is going to be about, you know, the design decisions made before you launch a community, and then we'll talk a little bit about kind of reacting to changes as the community grows up. And then we'll have a live Q&A with random questions from the audience.
No.
Forget that. We will not do live Q&A, but you can tweet at RRWhite, and if the questions are any good, we will then repeat them and answer them. And if they're really hard questions, we won't answer them either. So softballs only, please. All right. So what is community-centered design? So let me talk about what I think of when I think of user-centered design. And I didn't go to design school, so don't crucify me on this. I generally think of design as getting people from A to B. I think of, you know, I've got a user, I've got a persona, I've got an action that they want to take. Good design gets them efficiently and humanely from one place to the other. It gets them from, you know, the top of a sign-in form to the bottom and signed in. It gets them from a sign-up form to signed up. It's pretty straightforward. It really doesn't require thinking about a lot of externalities. It really requires putting yourselves in the shoes of that user. Community-centered design is much more fun. Because what the basis of community-centered design is that the community is more important than the needs of the individual user. So we might do things that piss off some individual users because they're better for the community as a whole. Like this. I drive by myself all the time, and I want to drive on this lane. And sometimes I do, actually. But I'm not supposed to. And this is a good example of kind of community-centered design. So analogy to the real world is public policy. What we're doing is defining the public policy of these web communities. And we're kind of codifying that policy through kind of the design of the site itself. I think of it like this. And this is what makes this part so fun to me. I find kind of the, you know, A to B to C design stuff kind of boring, frankly. I think of community-centered design as SimCity, where it's like, you know, this part's doing well and this part's all fucked up. So let's just jump into some teardowns. This is your standard kind of V-bulletin style message board. This actually happens to be a board I frequent about hockey. Any hockey fans? All three of us, yes. So this is pretty standard, right? This is the list of topics. It's ordered by the last post. This is, if I click in any of those topics, I get, here's a thread, right? So here's people's names, here's their comments, and it's ordered by oldest first. It's pretty simple stuff. If I want to create content, it's just a simple fill-in form. There's probably some really ridiculous emoticons I can use. Oh, but wait, I can't actually do that until I sign in or create an account. All in all, pretty standard. You've seen this in a lot of different places. So topics, comments, identity, and the ability to create content are kind of the four key things of any kind of online community software. In this case, in the standard case, it's sorted by last post. The comments are sorted oldest first. They are paginated, which means there are, you know, 10, 20 comments per page. Makes it easy for you to find your place. And there's a single thread of conversation, so we don't fork off the conversation at any given point. Identity is usernames, avatars, in this case, what the location of the user. Their join date and their number of posts. So the key thing for reputation in this community is how long have you been around and how much have you written? And the last part is creation. So a login is required. You can put text, images, quote other users. So that's kind of the basis that I'm going to work from when we describe any other community in this talk. We will kind of use this kind of framework of you know, what of these mechanics are we going to change, and what does that change about the resulting community? So here's another one. So this is called the Woof Web. It's a college message board. What I want to call your attention to is this. There's a thread on here that is 2,741 pages long. I challenge you to read this over the weekend. Why do we have a thread this long? Well, partially that's an outcome of having posts sorted by last post. If you go back here, if I go into a thread and I respond and add a new comment, it goes right back to the top of the page, which in some communities is what you want. Right? Sometimes that you do want to, you want to encourage this. But in some cases, this leads to what I call kind of a treehouse effect, right? Where you get these kind of really basic, really not value-adding topics constantly going back to the top of the page. For example, this one, what are you thinking about at this very moment? That's the thread with 2,000 pages. Does that really add value to the community? Well, maybe, because in this case, the community is about kind of creating that treehouse, right? It's about creating inside jokes. It's about people knowing who they are. The downside of that is it makes it hard for new members to join, because for me to join and not feel like a complete noob, I got to kind of know what's going on in some of these 30-page, 77-page threads. Keep going. Interesting thing on here is they don't have avatars. It's a bigger community. I think the community I showed you earlier with the hockey community is about 150 people. This one is about 15,000 people. So it would be kind of ridiculous to have that much space devoted to the person. In this case, it's just basically their name, and the reputation on this site is based on the number of posts. So it doesn't matter, really, when you signed up, that you could dig in the profile and figure that out. Reputation here is all based on how prolific a poster are you. So just think about what that might, the kind of behavior that might encourage. Does anyone know what this is? Someone say it. How many of you go to 4chan on a regular basis? Come on, don't be shy.
How many of you don't go to 4chan on a regular basis?
By the way, I tried to make a screenshot of this, and I was sitting at dinner, and that's a really, really bad idea. I scrolled down, and I scrolled back up very quickly. Anyways, 4chan, if you don't know, is fairly fascinating. I think it's where you guys get all your content, right? Zing. So it's really interesting. So it is an image board. So the first post of any thread has to be an image. After that, it can be whatever. It can be other images. There's forced anonymity. Everyone is anonymous, which I think is always funny. It always says anonymous, anonymous. So everyone is anonymous. And the other cool thing is threads aren't sorted by last post. They're sorted by first post. And even more than that, after a certain amount of time, the thread just gets deleted. On average, this is like a couple hours. So if you post something on here and you have a conversation, it's probably gone tomorrow when you try to go back to it. There is no reputation, because there is no identity. So this leads to a completely different type of community, right? This is where a lot of the memes of the internet come from. This is where a lot of really crazy shit on the internet comes from. But better or worse, it's an interesting kind of counterpoint to the treehouse that we saw with the Woof Web and with the hockey community. This is how you create content on here. This is it. Put in your email, put in your comment, do a verification. They don't show your email. I think they just started doing that. But they do track IPs, but they don't show them. Super easy to create content, very ephemeral, very scary. Stack Overflow. So now we are going back the other direction. So Stack Overflow, who doesn't know about Stack Overflow? No one? Good. Okay. Stack Overflow is a site for getting questions answered. So this is a different kind of community, because this community strives to reach an outcome. Right? In the previous two communities, there really was no set outcome other than come waste time here and discuss some topic. In the case of the Woof Web, let's talk about college. In the case of the hockey site, let's talk about hockey. This actually says, we're here to talk about programming. We're here to answer questions about programming. So it has a different layout, too. In this case, the homepage, which is the primary jumping off point for people to answer questions, is sorted by first post as well. What makes that interesting is that means this is a precious resource. So it's an expense to the community if a lot of new threads are created, right? And you think about things like these other posts. You know, someone posts something and it falls off, that's fine. But here, it goes right to the top of the front page. Which is funny, because if you go click ask a question, you get this. Oh, this. You get this thing, right, which says, welcome to Stack Overflow. Have you thoroughly searched for an answer to your question? Are you being specific? Are you on topic? And you can't see underneath this red thing at the bottom. There's a checkbox saying, yes, I've read all this stuff to proceed. They've created what Jeff Atwood calls a toddler-sized barrier to creating content, right? Because in this case, going back to my original premise, of sometimes we want to make certain actions expensive for the betterment of the community. In this case, we want to make content creation expensive because we don't want the community to be overrun in lots of questions with no answers. That would be detrimental to the community. If I go back, the other interesting thing about this is, in all the previous examples, comments were always just ordered by first post, or sorry, by oldest first. But in this case, they're ordered by something else, which is what the community thinks is the best answer. This also is multi-threaded, so every response to the topic actually has its own thread itself, but the key part is really the initial threaded response. So there are a number of things to thinking about. These are all very different communities. They all created very different outcomes. And yet they all have the same core data objects, if you will, right? They all had topics, they all had comments, they all had identity, and they all had a way to create content. What changed was basically how you discovered the content, how hard it was to create it, what your identity was. And so this is kind of the framework for a lot of how I think Reddit has grown up and User Voice has grown up, is thinking about these sorts of, you know, what kind of community do we want to create, and then making design decisions to fit that. Because the classic message board is really good for only a certain type of discussion. It's usually really good for a small community that wants to discuss things but doesn't want to come to actual outcomes. So with that, I will flip the thing over to you.
All right, which is forward, which is backwards?
Forward, back?
We'll figure it out. Okay. Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Huffman. I am one of the founders of Reddit. How many of you are not familiar with Reddit? Good. Perfect. Except, okay, one. Okay. I'm going to be operating under the assumption that most of you know how Reddit works and the, you know, that whole spiel. So we started Reddit almost 7 years ago now, in 2005. And what I want to walk through are some of the design decisions we made early on that I think really helped Reddit grow. It's hard for me to take credit for, like, the magical thing that Reddit has turned into, but I think we can take credit for not fucking it up. And we've done a lot of deliberate things. Despite being an ugly website, I think we've done a lot of little things right that really made the community work and help things grow. So, some history. When we started, you're going to see a lot of old screenshots of Reddit too, by the way. Okay. When we started Reddit, this is a screenshot from Slashdot in 2005. This is what I was using before Reddit. And this is, you know, this is Nudes for Nerds. Users, I think users would submit links, but the links had to be approved by moderators. And once a link was approved by a moderator, it would appear at the top of the screen and, you know, work its way down over the course of the day. And you get about, you know, in this particular case, this is, I think, 700 pixels tall, which is probably twice as tall as my screen at the time. You get three links at once. It's not very dense. The content moves very, very slowly, about one link per hour. And, I mean, but this was the shit in 2005, actually in like 2000, actually like 1995 maybe. But Slashdot was like, they were kings of the world, right? Especially in this kind of social news, you know, area. This is Delicious. These guys also existed in 2005. And what Delicious had is this really neat, so let's talk about what Delicious was. It was a bookmarking site. So if you found something interesting online, or you know, that you wanted to see again later, you would add it to Delicious. And so Delicious is just a list of links that somebody wanted to save to read for later. It was really nice. It had cool content, super dense, except the problem is people only bookmark things they can't read in one sitting. So kind of by nature, they're long and boring or reference materials. But Delicious had this really cool thing going on called Delicious Popular. I couldn't find a screenshot of it. The only screenshot I could find was Michael Arrington's bookmark, so yeah, sorry. Delicious Popular looks just like this, except the links are marginally better. And what Delicious Popular was is when users submit links to Delicious to bookmark them, it's not really submitting, it was just bookmarking. Delicious Popular was the most popular links that had been submitted over and over that day. And so it was this very cool dynamic of ever-changing content, except it was all shitty content, reference material. So what we wanted to build in Reddit was the combination of Slashdot and Delicious. We wanted to build this site where you could find new and interesting content online all day. And this is what Reddit looked like in January of 2006, I think. This was my favorite time of Reddit. And so if you look at Delicious and you look at Reddit, I mean, you can see we basically copied their design, like wholesale. I think I even took its colors. And it was funny, because this was before we even knew Dig existed. I don't know if you guys remember that drama. But we were trying to make Delicious, but with good content. And I think we largely achieved that. Delicious is, unfortunately, not really with us anymore, and Slashdot is a ghost town. But Reddit lives on as the front page of the internet, just the random stuff. So a couple things that we did that I think were really important. Okay, yeah, blah, 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 blah. So the way Reddit works is users submit stories, they vote on them, and our front page is whatever's the most popular. Things don't appear at the top and work their way down. Links start at the bottom and work their way up. And good links rise fast and fall slow. And bad links rise maybe not at all. And so the best content will stay on Reddit's front page for almost a whole day, and while other links will only stay on the front page for a few hours. But the point is, when you come back to Reddit, there's always new content there, and that kind of keeps this addictive cycle going. And that's what we really wanted. We wanted people to come to Reddit and find content. We figured we'd make it as dense as possible so that when you come to Reddit, there's a better chance that you're going to find something that you like. And that was, I think, really important. The first versions of Reddit were even more dense. Like, we argued so much about this space. I mean, I can't tell you like how long we spent on like that spacing. We had it drilled down super tight. And it was really intimidating to new users, but once you got into it, it was like, holy cow, like, look at all this stuff. So that's Reddit. Now, I think this is Reddit even earlier, like 2005 or something. I want to talk about this area, the login box. This is something I think everybody gets wrong. We had to have logins because we wanted this sense of identity, but we wanted like the smallest unit of identity possible to make the community work. We didn't take your email address, we don't take your name, we didn't take your home address or your gender or anything. Your username, your password. Your username had to be 3 characters long, no restrictions. I think I had to start with a letter, maybe. Your password, only 3 letters. We don't want to play this bullshit game of you must have 8 characters and you must have a ampersand in it and stuff like that. We wanted the login process to be easy, stress-free. We take as little as possible. Not taking email address meant we don't have to play this whole game of confirmation emails and that whole cycle that like takes you out of the flow. Like if you want to sign up to a website, or if you've got a user who wants to sign up to your website, you've got about 1 minute to get them engaged. And if they have to go back to their email and do a confirmation thing, go through a welcome thing, it's just, you're going to lose that user. And this is kind of the opposite of what Stack Overflow did. Stack Overflow, incidentally, they basically took Reddit and then added a lot of really smart improvements to it for their needs, where they make you like agree that you're going to behave and play by their rules. On Reddit, we were just thinking, we'll just get as many users as possible, no rules. And that's how it'll work. And users really identified with it, and that's what made Reddit magical in the beginning. This was our original submit page. Again, it's a common theme. We take as little information as possible. The URL you want to link to, and a title. That's it. There was no categories. Actually, we did add categories at one point. About a month in, we said, oh, maybe we should have categories. And we made up like 25 categories, the usual stuff like sports and politics and music and whatever. And my co-founder Alexis had to spend all night taking every link that had been submitted to Reddit and categorizing them so that when we launched this feature, everything would be in its nice categories. And the feature was online for maybe 2 hours. And users were just like, what the fuck, Reddit? Like, it was great without categories. And we're like, I guess you're right. It was great without categories. So, a lot of these lessons, these are mostly lessons in hindsight. And definitely no categories was a big one. Duplicate URL detection. I initially didn't bother doing this because, I didn't want to. And I was thinking, like, what's the problem? And in hindsight, that was actually really fortunate. Because you know, if a user submits the same URL somebody else did, yeah, that the votes may get split, but maybe he had a better title, or maybe, you know, maybe he submitted at a better time of day. And there's all these like nice little community artifacts that come out of that if you don't restrict them. So not caring about duplicates allowed these nice community, you know, workflows to happen. So if you submit something to Reddit and then some other guy submits the same link, the original guy, you know, he might get all pissed off, you know, because you hijacked this link and blah 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 blah, everybody gets angry. But that's, you know, that's how the community manages itself. So your second link, if you're going to submit that second duplicate link, it better be good, right? Or you better get a bigger audience seeing it. And we thought that was totally fine. So we let users get angry at each other and hijack each other's links. We felt like that made the dynamic work. And the other big thing is anybody can submit. You don't have to, you know, and everybody's links, you know, start off with one point. There's nothing, you know, nobody's special. It's a meritocracy. If your link is good, people vote on it, it rises up, and that's how it works. And maintaining that feeling was super important to us. Okay, so now I want to talk about comments. Comments was a big turning point in Reddit. We didn't have comments initially. We didn't have comments for the first, almost 9 months or so. Reddit was just links. It was just delicious, but with better content. When we added comments, it was such a huge turning point. Comments is like, that's how we let Reddit's personality really come out. That's how we knew we were onto something magical. We didn't want to do it, you know, the /dot way where, you know, users just submit comments. Comments were kind of sorted by time, and they also had this moderation system 1 through 5, and that wasn't quite what we wanted to do, and we just couldn't really put our finger on it. And the big like lightning bolt moment for us was when we decided that we would sort comments by hotness. We'd sort comments by the same algorithm that we sort our front page links by. And so if you come to a Reddit comments page, the best comments would be at the top and the bottom ones would be at the bottom. And that worked really nice. And the worst comments were just collapsed. They were just hidden altogether. And so that meant there was an incentive to write good comments. Good either means funny or interesting or, you know, clever trolling. But the annoying stuff, the racism, the spam, that sort of thing, just disappeared at the bottom. We didn't have spam prevention on Reddit for years. It just wasn't an issue because users, you know, spammers submit spam, it disappears. No problem. Like it's the community kind of managed itself and the algorithm kind of managed it itself, and we just never really had to deal with it. One of the problems we had with sorting comments by hotness is that when you come back, you know, our hot algorithm was kind of designed around a 24-hour period. You know, once something's older than about 24 hours, it's really hard for it to stay hot, for it to stay popular. So if you had a comment thread that was lasting, you know, for a long time, which, you know, happen all the time. There's like some comment thread where they're like listing out the digits of pi still. Like they've been doing this for 5 years or something. you know, the new comments always appear at the top. Or if somebody links to an old comment thread, I was like, oh, you know, remember this Reddit, blah, 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 blah. The new comments appear at the top because all of a sudden they're the most hot. And we fixed this problem. This was a gift from Randall, the founder of XKCD. He suggested we use this new algorithm, and we call that algorithm the best algorithm. So you can see here, these comments are sorted by best. You can also sort them by hotness to see what it is. And the way best works is you can statistically predict what the final ratio of ratings is going to be on something based on the first few votes. And I feel like anybody who's running a moderation system that has voting, and if they're not using that algorithm, you're cheating yourself. It's all of 4 lines of code. Reddit's open source, by the way, so you can dig it out. And I wish I could remember the actual mathematics to give you the vocabulary word to Google it, but it's in there somewhere. If you email me afterwards, I'll point you to it. But sorting by this algorithm is so nice. So comments that it has this nice effect that when somebody shows up to a thread that's already got 500 comments and leaves a good one and he gets, you know, 3 upvotes, And he's competing against comments that have hundreds of points, he'll get up to the top. And it works very nicely. It's really cool. And if he gets a few downvotes and our initial guess wasn't correct, you know, it adjusts accordingly. Okay. Well, one last thing I want to say about comments is, you know, we didn't know this going in. what Comets was going to do to the site. And when we launched them, there was huge backlash, huge community backlash about, like, this is the death of Reddit. Reddit's turning into Dig, blah, 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 blah. Reddit's comments are, I think, is some of the best content on the web. And it's certainly the best content on Reddit. Like, this is where Reddit's personality, the humor, this is all where it comes through. And without this, you know, we didn't have this. And when we saw people, when we saw how smart and funny our users are, it was just this incredible moment. Reddit, we've never looked back. The other big turning point for us were the subreddits, making your own Reddits. Now, we launched this in, I think it was 2007, maybe 2008. So initially in Reddit, we had one big category, one just big pile of links. But as we grew, we started to struggle with, you know, as our user base grew beyond the initial kind of like programming libertarian atheist user, we had this front page that was really alienating to new users, and we always struggled with this. So, you know, we did a few things. You know, I made a programming subreddit. That was the first subreddit. I made that so like the programmers could have their little place to hide and be, you know, insulated from the rest of Reddit. And then I made a politics Reddit so that those guys could have a place to be really, really pissed off without like scaring the rest of Reddit. But that's all we had for a while. It was Reddit.com, programming, and politics. And we had this user-created Reddit feature almost the entire time, but only I knew the URL. So I would make a Reddit occasionally. When we got bought by Condé, Condé asked me to make like 20 more, so we did the music, the sports thing again, and it took forever for them to take off. But when we allowed users to make their own Reddit, that's when Reddit went from being a small niche thing to the powerful, magical thing it is today. I mean, some of these Reddits, like IAMA, I hope you guys are familiar with this. This is where people say, I am a, you know, gay prostitute on Craigslist, ask me anything, which was a really good piece of content. It was on there yesterday. I suggest you all read it. It's incredible. Me and Alexis and the other Reddit guys, we did not think of that. The users made that. The users grew it. They've curated it. They've moderated it. And it's turned into, I mean, it's a website all on its own. Some of the stuff is so powerful. And I think what really made it work is that we did not care how it was used. You can make as many subreddits as you want. You can make spammy ones. You can make porn ones. You can make, you know, you can argue, like, if two people want to compete over, like, who's got the dominant picture Reddit, fine with us. We don't care. You know, if you want to moderate it with a heavy fist, if you want to just let it be a free-for-all, we don't care. And I think not caring was one of the most important things we did on Reddit. So when we were designing new features and growing the site, we started to develop these, what I call the pillars of Reddit. The things that we thought about with every new feature and what we wanted to do. The most important thing was the community should always feel small. Reddit is a very nostalgic place. When you're hanging out there, people always talk about the good old days of Reddit, like how much better it was in 2006 or whatever. And it was better in 2006. But we wanted to create this framework where Reddit always felt small. We wanted people's usernames to matter. We wanted people to develop these personalities. And if you wanted, like, five alter egos that would all get in an argument and be really funny, that was cool. That was one of those nice things that made the community feel kind of friendly and homey. And the user-created Reddits was the best feature we did for making the community feel small. Because now on Reddit, you can find a home anywhere. Any type of content you're looking for is in there somewhere with its own, you know, maybe goofy, maybe really smart community. And it was really nice. Let users do the hard part. I was the lead engineer of Reddit, by the way. This was my excuse for being lazy. When we had a recommendation engine, which everybody wanted us to do this recommendation engine, you know, learn what users like, watch what they're voting on, and you can recommend them links. And my excuse for finally shutting that down was, it's too hard. People expect this magical AI to recommend them links, and we just, you know, you recommend them one wrong link, and then they write the feature off forever. And we spent a lot of time working on this sort of stuff. Letting users recommend each other stuff is the way to go. Let users make the communities. Let users manage the spam. You know, humans are very smart people. They're very clever. They'll do really neat things if you give them the freedom to do so. And so whenever we had the option of, you know, building this complicated infrastructure to corral users into some type of behavior, we would say, you know, is it easier just to you know, let them do it themselves, just give them a little nudge in the right direction and give them the tools to do it? And I mean, I still, at my current company, Hitmonk, we do flight search. It's still the same way. Like, we do not try to solve hard problems. We solve the easiest problems we can. And it's a lot easier to work that way. The other thing that was important to us is we never remove content. As moderators, Alexis and I, you know, we could you know, manipulate the whole thing if we wanted. But we almost never did that. We would remove racism and spam. And that was it. You know, we goof occasionally in you know, some spam, false positives or whatnot, but never removing content was so important. And it was so hard to do, but it's one of the things that allowed Reddit to work. Because a lot of the content I wanted to remove was content that was, you know, ripping Reddit or ripping me personally, you know, for, you know, if I fucked up somehow. And those were the hardest links to sit there and wake up and just get, you know, just getting flamed by literally thousands of people. But by stomaching that, you know, we had this trust between us and our users that we were going to let the content live. And ultimately, that's one of the reasons Reddit, you know, ended up beating out Digg in the long run, Digg being our other big competitor in the space, is because Digg never had that relationship with their users. They never managed to, you know, earn that trust. So when Digg fucked up and Digg, you know, tried to say, hey, we fucked up, nobody believed them. You know, if we goofed on Reddit, we can just say, you know, our bad, we're sorry. And people would usually say, okay, you know, no big deal. When in doubt, figure it out later. That's very similar to let the users do the hard part. You know, when we started building things, you know, day one, I started thinking about spam. You know, how should we prevent spam? Spammers are going to be everywhere. And then, fortunately, it was, you know, I had this kind of thought where it's like, well, we don't have spam now, so maybe we shouldn't be spending any time on the spam problem. You know, we don't know what we're going to do on communities, so let's just let that one ride for a while. You know, comments, not sure about it. You know, we'll figure it out later. The more you build kind of on the job live, while you can see people interacting with it, you know, the more likely you are to get the feature right, to build something that people actually want and need and will interact with. So we just put things off, and then it'd be really obvious. Like, when we launched in 2005, Web 2.0 and tags, like, tags were like the thing. Like, tags were this revolutionary idea. Everything had to be tagged. And everybody was like, when is Reddit going to have tags? When is Reddit going to have tags? And we were just like, I don't know. Like, like, what problems do tags solve? It doesn't solve any problems on Reddit. And so we just put it off. And finally, you know, we've moved beyond tags, thank God. The final thing is personality is critical. I think when you're managing a community, when you're growing something like this, or any company, really, your company's personality, your company's culture is a direct reflection of your founder's personality and culture. And on Reddit, I think we were really good, Alexis and I, about, you know, letting our personalities come through on the site. So our error messages were snarky. You know, if you broke Reddit, you got a big sign that said, you broke Reddit. If we broke Reddit, you got a big sign that said, you broke Reddit. But that sort of stuff is like endearing, and users like that, and users like knowing there's a human behind it. And when we screw up and I'd apologize, people would, you know, realize that there's a human on the other end of that and would usually accept, like, you know, my apology. And when you've got companies that are so disconnected from their community, or founders who are so disconnected from the community, you lose this magical opportunity to, you know, to create friends online. And our users were our friends, and that's what made the whole thing work. So we had this ugliest sin website that was broken all the time, but people stuck with us because they liked us, they liked what we were doing, and they liked the way we treated them. And you know, it's a two-way street. So that is my spiel, I think, on the design of the early days of Reddit. Rich is going to go through the same thought process with his site, User Voice.
I'm going to have to make you go through features.reddit, though.
Okay.
All right. So, actually, it's funny because about the same time, probably been like a year after you launched Reddit, Steve and I were working in the same room, and I was working on another startup called Kiko, and I was the designer, and I was really, really excited to be getting all this customer feedback, and I was getting it all through our forums. And it was really an unfun experience to try to get customer feedback through kind of the vBulletin style forums we had earlier. For the most part, it was like really noisy, right? These were all discussions. They weren't actually telling me, you should do this, and here's 100 people that wanted me to do that. It was kind of, well, here's an idea, and people would plus one it, and then they'd say, well, you should change it this way. So it was kind of a fail, right? So it was like, how do I tell which one of these topics should be the thing I focus on, or just even the thing I investigate further? Because replies don't imply agreement with the overall topic premise. And like I said, if I go into every thread, I've got things where it's like plus one, or plus one, but only if you change it this way, or plus one, and also try to do this as well. And it was really hard to figure out, okay, what are the people that really like this thing, and what is the thing that people that don't? Furthermore, it was a really high barrier to entry to say plus one. If you remember from before, just to say, I agree with this, you had to go create an account, you had to go find the thread, you had to go to the bottom, you had to hit reply, and you had to add plus one. And it was also really annoying because I couldn't follow up with anyone. I couldn't just say, we had this big debate about time zones. Time zones are important. Everyone's pissed off about our time zone support. And then at one point we're like, why don't we just email all these guys back and be like, hey, here's like three solutions. Which one would work for you? And I'm like, I don't have a spreadsheet of that shit. I have like 10 forum threads kind of meandering around this topic. So forums didn't work. And actually, it was funny, because at the time, I was like, oh, maybe we can use Reddit for this. Reddit would work, right? It would solve my problem in that it would aggregate people around, hey, what are the actual things you want to build? And you guys had features.reddit at the time.
Yeah, which I totally forgot about until we started doing this presentation. We had a features.reddit, and you could submit features to Reddit, and users can vote on what they liked. And the reason I forgot about it is because I always disregarded their opinions.
Well, and the other thing was, though, on features.reddit, if I recall, like, everyone voted up every single thing.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you? Oh, it's all great, right? Like, I'll take all the features. So, you know, Reddit wouldn't work because it was all the things. It's like, here's... I remember seeing on features.reddit, streaming on a screenshot, you'd have one guy go on there and core dump like 10, 15 things, and then everyone would vote them up. So it had this huge vocal minority problem, right? Where you've got like 10 guys, which on Reddit is great. Like, Reddit kind of has a vocal minority thing, too. There's only a small percentage of people that are creating content on Reddit.
Extremely vocal minority. The vocalist, the minority.
But that's not what we wanted here. I wanted a more representative voice of my customer base. And Reddit actually was still even too complex for what I wanted, right? Because I didn't need downvoting. I didn't need these big comment threads and all the stuff that you guys had. I needed something much simpler. So our mandate was to make a community ultra accessible to casual users, because most people won't be back. This is a community not made up of people, you know, getting cool links on the web, which is engaging, or answering questions about programming, which is engaging. This is people giving feedback to a company. That's not very engaging by nature, right? That's not something I come back every day and say, oh boy, what can I tell this company today? So you really have to really keep the bar very, very low if you want people to get involved. And that was my main problem with forums. Forums had this high bar. I had to sign up. I had to become part of this community. And the only people that would take that much time were these vocal minorities. Like, who loves your company and your product so much, they're going to go to your forum, they're going to dig through all the other comments, they're going to read them all, understand them, and then respond, you know, thoughtfully to them. Like, a minuscule amount of people. So that kind of informed, so taking what Steve was doing in Reddit and what I had looked at and seen with message boards kind of informed kind of our initial design of User Voice. And User Voice has grown up since then, and we do all sorts of help desk and all those other things. But our core thing originally was, how do we make it really easy to get customer feedback? So the first thing we did was, like Reddit, we sorted topics not by last post or first post, we sorted them by what seemed to be most popular. What had the most votes. The other thing we did is we had a very easy way to get into the conversation. There wasn't like a posted topic, there was basically an input form at the top of the page. And what was important about the input form is we framed everything as it's like Jeopardy, right, where you have to frame things in the form of a question. Here you had to frame them in the form of an imperative. You should do this, right? Because I don't want questions, I don't want problems, I want actionable things, and let people decide whether they think that actionable thing is worth doing. We also realized that it's much easier for people to co-opt content than it is to create it, right? Content creation is really hard, and you'll roll a rock up a hill trying to get a large percentage of people to create content. What you want to do is just have them say, I agree. And I agree, kind of like buttons are now, is, you know, 1 to 2 order magnitudes more people will do that than create source content. So the other thing we did is we allowed people to co-opt content, but we also made it hard for them to create new content. kind of like Stack Overflow. We don't want people putting the same thing up five times because it's a small community, and if there's a lot of duplication, it really dilutes the focus of this small community. And the last thing we did was we had a limit on the number of votes. So people would type in type in their prompt, you should add an Android version. We'd find, oh, look, Android version exists. Why don't you vote for this? Originally, actually, we didn't have even, here it says leave your email address. Before, we just had voting anonymously. And people loved that. It was very low barrier to entry. It was like our number one thing. The problem was, one of our core things I said before is, I don't just want to figure out what's the top thing. I actually want to follow up with the people that wanted it. So we made the decision that it was important for us to get as many emails as possible because we can't close that feedback loop if we don't do that. So now we collect email addresses. You can still create a post. Sorry, I'm skipping around. You can run out of votes. So the thing that we did to try to solve what we thought the Reddit problem was of all the things, people voting up everything, was saying, look, you get 10 votes. You can spend them on 10 things. You can spend them on one thing. But you can't basically vote up everything. You have to make a choice. You have to prioritize one of these things over the other. This ended up being useful because 11% of people spent every vote we gave them. And we raised the vote limit twice. And every time, the same 11% of people always hit that vote limit, right? Those were the guys that were posting every idea, and they were voting up every idea. So I think that worked decently well. You could still create content, but you had to jump through a couple different hoops to do it. You had to look at a bunch of existing search matches and be like, no, it's not this. I really still want to create this. We had identity. Our identity is different, right? So in Reddit, you guys had sock puppets, and it didn't matter. You can make up your own identity. Here, it was really important for you to be you. You to be your real name, your real person. So we just had names. We have gravatars. We used to have karma, and we eventually got rid of karma. And the way we track karma was, are you submitting great ideas that other people are voting up? Are you doing kind of what we call kind of like super user behavior? Like if you went into another comment thread on an idea you didn't even support, like I don't support this idea, but I went into the comment thread and discussed it with people, that was like a huge flag of this person is a super user. Right, because they want to kind of help manage the community. Eventually, though, we used to show karma back to the community, but eventually we decided that there's no value in that because these guys don't come here enough often. It would only serve to kind of create a stratification of the new guys versus the old guys. We wanted when people came here, there'd be no way to tell really who are the super users and who are not. Now, the company can, right? The company can look at this and see who the super users are, but the users themselves should see basically equality. And the last part is comments. So in Reddit, comments are supremely important. In fact, I read all the comments before I even click the link. Here, they're really useless. They're not useless, but they're really not important. They're kind of a blow-off valve. Because my whole thing is you should never have to read the comments. If I go back to this slide here, you can see under where it says Android SDK, it says under review. And so at any given point, you don't have to go to the comment thread to figure out. I don't have to read 10 pages of stuff to say, oh, this is where this thing stands, and this is what the company has said about it. It basically, I can see directly on the home page, here's the response. So the comment thread in our case is very underutilized. It's more there just kind of as a catch-all so people don't post that content back into the top forum. So that's, I think we've covered kind of like, and you went a little bit into kind of how Reddit grew up a little bit, but mainly we've been talking about kind of design decisions that were made very early on, almost in the first 3 months of both of these communities being built. And I think that's the right way to do it. We don't want to overbuild things. I think everyone I talked to, and Jeff Atwood from Stack Overflow couldn't be here today, but he's brilliant when it comes to community stuff. I think they've, in terms of building communities to get outcomes, they've done a great job. So I want to kind of talk about things where, so you've built kind of this forum space, this community space. Now people are actually going to live in it, and they're going to break down the walls, and they're going to crap on the sidewalks. Really good story from Stack Overflow. So Stack Overflow early on, so reputation is really important in Stack Overflow. So you get reputation by answering questions and by people liking your answer to that question. And reputation, karma and Reddit is basically vanity, right?
Yes. Well, initially it was just vanity. It was just the game. And then we started realizing that karma is actually a really good identifier for certain types of users. For example, if you have extremely negative karma, maybe we shouldn't let you submit quite so fast.
Right. but by and large, it's not. In Stack Overflow, reputation is a prerequisite to do certain actions.
Yeah, only negative karma matters on Reddit.
Okay. Sacrifice, they have a thing called Meta. So they have a separate site for governance. You can't post in Meta unless you have at least 5 reputation. So reputation is important. Early on, though, some of the most popular topics on Stack Overflow became, what's your favorite code comment? Which was wildly popular, right? And everyone loved it and was posting all these things. And they had this real, I think Stack Overflow is kind of the yin to your yang, and that they have a more kind of like moderated feel. They said, this is bad for the community. This is bad because this is not what we're about. We're about answering questions. This is entertainment. And this is not a place for entertainment. So they had this whole big discussion, and eventually they decided that what they were going to do is empower the community to self-moderate. And so they launched a thing where you could close a question, but you had to have 3,000 reputation to close a question. So you had to be a fairly active regular user to do it. And the other thing that was key is they listed very explicitly, these are the reasons you might want to close this thread, right? It's not, it can't be open-ended. It can't just be, you close it, you know, it's like bury, right? You can't just bury it because you want to bury it. It has to meet one of these criteria. And multiple people have to agree that it's met this criteria. And so that was a big battle they had in that community, which eventually they decided, you know, this is part of kind of governance of the community once it was up and running of this is not acceptable behavior.
Ah, okay, so random screenshot, and now I will explain it. Okay, so this was, when we started Reddit, we had this problem where we had this community website with no content on it. And we you know, that's no good. When users show up to your site, especially a site with user-submitted content, there's no content there, it looks kind of sad and everybody leaves. So I showed you previously our submit page that just had URL and title. This was mine and Alexis's special submit page. Also, the Reddit alien's eyes are green, which, so this is like July 2005. But anyway, we had this special submit page where, in addition to title and URL, we could type in a username. And then I would automatically register that username and then submit the link as that person. And Alexis and I would submit about 100 links each every morning. And we faked all of this content for probably the first, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, where Reddit was really just me and Alexis. Like, we'd go to, like, I actually had this program that would basically crawl the web and download about 25 of our, like, what we considered our competitors' pages, and would show me all of the links that were on that page that weren't there the previous day, and then we just submit all of those. And and that worked really well. And still to this day, Alexis and I each have a lot of accounts. But I remember the morning when I woke up, what I used to do is I would basically hit the next page until the submissions would dry up. And then I would vote everything up. And then, you know, I would go through my submitting thing. I remember the morning I woke up and I didn't have to vote anything up and I didn't have to submit anything. It was the most incredible feeling. And because that meant like we had real users who were doing real things and the site was sustaining itself. And that didn't happen for like 4 or 5 months. Like, Reddit was kind of, it was funny because we're getting credit for like starting this company and it's all great growth and whatever, but it was really just me and Alexis. But I think there's a really good lesson in there, which is, you know, you've got to, you know, the cliche is fake it till you make it. And that's what we were all about. We just faked it. And then one day it just started working on its own. And that was a really powerful thing. It worked out really nicely for us. So we already talked about AMA. But I was going to talk about how magical AMA was and how neat it is. But we already went through that discussion, so we'll move on.
Ran out of things to put on slides. So we're going to basically, what's our time check on this?
We're 1:15.
Oh, we're screwed. Okay. So just kind of wrapping up, there are really 2 ways to influence your community. And I use the word influence very purposefully there. Because you really can't, there's no central planning here. You can't make it, you can't make the community exactly what you want. But you can do 2 things to influence it, right? One is you can do it from inside the community. That's kind of like what you guys did to start up the community. It's kind of what Jeff Atwood did with, you know, telling this is not appropriate content by setting, kind of establishing social norms. Even user voice, we recommend, it's like when a company sets up a forum, we say you should go write the first 3 things so that they are kind of on the topic you want them to be about. And the other one, which we've talked a lot about, obviously, is the design of the public space. So be thoughtful with that design, right? Don't just say, I'm just going to throw up a vBulletin thing, or I'm just going to create, I need posts, I need comments. Think about these things, What do you want your community to accomplish? How many people do you need to accomplish that? Is the size correlate to the outcome you want to achieve, right? For example, Reddit doesn't work, I think, with like 50 people.
No.
So you've got to be able to get to scale, and so if you've got to get to scale, then you've got to have easy on-ramps for people to become new users and stuff like that. How inclusive should it be? So that's kind of similar, right? Like, there is value in having small communities. My favorite little hockey message board probably wouldn't be as much fun if it was 10,000 people, because we would lose a sense of, who each other were. How often will members be visiting? Reddit, people go like every day. User voice, they go like every month. Stack Overflow, it's probably somewhere in between that, right? And so you kind of design around what will people be doing in this community, how often will they be coming, what are their motivations? And I think the one thing to take away from this is, what are the speed bumps or the kind of toddler-sized barriers you might need to erect to drive the community to doing the things you want, and more importantly, drive them away from the things you don't want them to do? But the key thing is, don't overdo it. By the way, that's Dubai. Be prepared to react, and at Steve's point, react slowly. Don't over-design your community. Give it a, make it a nice little area, but then just sit back and see what happens and, kind of add bumpers as necessary.
Yeah, I think the most important lesson that I'd like you to take from this is that every community is different, and every path to success is different, and so what worked for Reddit doesn't work for User Voice, doesn't work for Stack Overflow. And you have to be thoughtful. That's the right word here. You have to look at what your community is doing and make sure you are building features for that community, not for some other community. That's why we never did tags on Reddit. It's you've got to make sure you're not getting caught up in the, caught up in the moment and doing things just for the sake of doing them. And if you pay attention to what you're building, things will work out a lot better. Okay, so I think that's all we've got. We're going to try to do some QA. And do we have any good questions on the Twitter?
There's one about Google Plus, and I know nothing about Google Plus.
Okay.
I'm just glad there wasn't a Pinterest question.
Oh, well, I've got an opinion on everything. So, the question, can I read that question? What are your thoughts on the Google Plus community? It's hard to say. I don't know if the community is real. I have probably 1,000 or 2,000 followers on Google Plus, and I've never put a message up, a status message, a picture, or anything. I think they're all fake people. I'm really not sure where they came from. I think Google's actually doing something which is, it's reminiscent of kind of how Microsoft used to act, which is they're afraid of Facebook, and so they're just playing catch-up, and it feels like a very desperate move. So, I don't know. We'll see.
It seems easier to create an engaging community from the ground up. What about established communities that need a shake-up? That's actually probably more of your question.
So one of the things Rich and I discussed, and we didn't get a slide in here, is that it's really hard to change the rules on a community after you get it going. With Reddit, like once we had done this no censorship thing, like it's a free-for-all, whatever you want to do, you can't take that away. You can't make up new rules. You can make,
the iterations.
Yeah. You can kind of herd people into the ways you kind of would like them to behave in the future, but you can't change the name of the game. And when sites do that, for example, when Digg did that, in their attempt to compete with Twitter, their users just were like, we're done. Digg's traffic went, like literally plummeted in one day, and Reddit's traffic doubled that same day. And I don't know what they were thinking. They had like a huge website with a powerful community, and they were just like pulled the carpet out from under these people and like ruined the whole thing. It was shocking and also one of the happiest days of my life.
I'll ask a question. So, do you think if you'd implemented subreddits from the beginning, they would have worked as well as they do?
No, because Reddit hadn't developed that sense of self yet, and that's what made the subreddits work. There was this, when we made it user-created Reddits, there was a big need for it. The users were clamoring for it, like they wanted it. So even though the feature was a little half-baked and not quite ready for prime time, the users wanted it so bad that they used it. If we had had that from the beginning, it wouldn't have made sense because we hadn't developed all those rules. The Reddit society didn't exist yet. And so it would have been...
I think it's really interesting to think about how you scale communities. Stack Exchange is a good example where they had their Stack Exchange 1.0. Anyone could create their own kind of Stack Overflow site. And most of those sites end up being kind of ghost towns, and they end up shutting it down. Mm-hmm. And now they have this very deliberate and kind of cool process called Area 51, where people can propose a community, but it takes like 6 months. So it's like the inverse of the subreddit, where it can be up in like 30 seconds. There's like 6 months, and you have to like recruit a core kind of founding community.
Okay. Last question, I think.
What role do you think constraints play in communities, example 4chan or Twitter? That's kind of open-ended. Are there constraints on 4chan?
I don't know if there are.
I mean, that's what makes 4chan 4chan.
Yeah. Did you want to ask them? How do constraints apply to companies, or how do
I think the thought process of designing a community is similar to designing your company. This is what I was kind of alluding to before, which is you need to be thoughtful about what your strategy is. When you're starting a startup, you know, you're playing this big game that has a lot of players, and you need to look at your position, what you're building, what your market is, and do that. If you try to follow somebody else's playbook, you're going to get it wrong. That's why I think Google Plus is probably not going to win against Facebook, because they're using somebody else's playbook, which is annoying because they've got their own fucking awesome playbook that they've been killing it for the last 5 years. It's like, what are you guys doing? But I mean, it's like that with all businesses.
I'll say one thing about that. I think startups need to do a lot of things which are non-scalable and not worry about that. It depends on startups. Like, we'll work with a lot of startups that they're a startup, but they may have more active, engaged users than some big energy company will, right? So I think it's not really determined on the size of the company, but the size and the passion of the user base. So a passionate user base is easier to motivate. The most active user voice sites are generally gaming sites, because those people are very passionate and they're locked into that product, and so they want it to be better, because it's hard for them to switch to another game, because they've invested 4 years of their life in World of Warcraft. What about a B2B company?
I think it's the same.
It's the same thing. Yeah. How many other Bs are there on the end of your B, right? Are there 100 other very passionate people? Well, in that case, maybe you can just talk to them yourselves, right? Are there 300? Well, maybe then it makes sense for you to put it into some sort of community process. Certainly if there's 10,000, then you want to do something different, right? Do we have plans? Does User Voice or Reddit have plans on going international? What measures are in place to support that? We're in 43 different languages, and Evan, number of countries? This was on a post. A lot. More than I can rattle off, and I want a geography bee. So.
And Reddit, like, this was a good example of that users do the hard part. I think we're translated into a bazillion languages, and the users did all of our translations. We just built a little framework for them to, you know, here's the words on the site, and you can translate it into your language. And we have no idea what any of those languages say. So
we have the same thing. We built a thing where people can translate it.
Yeah.
I have a Google Translate thing that just basically makes sure that people aren't cursing.
Yeah.
Right? In a reverse translation.
Yeah. We don't care. We figure, like, you know, if you want to make the German Reddit really profane, that's cool. Like, maybe you're representative of the German culture that's going to be on Reddit. You know, whatever.
All right. Well, very cool. Thanks so much for coming out at the end of South By for this. If you need to book travel in the future, be sure to use Hipmunk.